Annie is one of the most gifted homeopaths we have practicing today. She has been in practice for over 30 years. She has one of the extremely busy practice, and she offers seminars both in Europe and the United States. She's currently teaching in Winter Park, Florida. It's the ninth year in a row that she's taught in Florida. She also teaches in Oregon every year as well. I've had the good fortune of personally sitting in and watching Henny teach at her classes, both in Portland, Oregon, and in Winter Park, Florida. And she definitely is one of the most gifted prescribers and teachers that we have. I've been continuously impressed with her ability to analyze the case. And I'll tell you a quick little story. There was one case presented in the last seminar where no one was able to really understand what the remedy was. People were guessing different remedies, and finally we had decided upon the remedy carcinosin. And literally everyone was astounded. No one could have guessed the remedy ahead of time except for Henny. But in retrospect, after she explained the case, everyone said, of course it is carcinosin. And I remember Dr. Richard Mann, who's the head of Baxter University, said, I'm going to become a fisherman. And I said, yeah, I think I'm going to join you, Richard. The case was so well analyzed, and no one was able to understand it until she had explained it. We really felt like we were just at the beginning of our study of homeopathy, and we were really in the presence of somebody who really was a master. So Henny really is a master practitioner, somebody who is extremely gifted. And if anybody ever speaks to any of the people who have been studying with her for 10 or 15 or 20 years, they'll essentially tell you the same thing. She's one of the best teachers we have. Not only is she herself a gifted homeopath, but she's really able to explain to others how she practices. And I think her use of the miasms is one of the unique gifts that she offers to all of us. Again, Henny, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to the call. So, Henny, I know that you're working on, you've just completed a book that's just been published on miasms. There's a lot of confusion out there about, you know, miasms, how to use them, what they are. I thought perhaps you could give us a short explanation of what a miasm actually is.
It is a basic situation in health that people can get by suppressing illnesses or by getting in contact with other, close contact with other living material, or that you can inherit from your parents when their illnesses were suppressed. The origin of the miasms, which are called psoriasis, syphilis, are due to original illnesses that the forefathers of the patient or the patient himself had and was suppressed.
When you have a case, how are you able to recognize the miasm in the patient? I've seen you do this in practice, and it's very impressive. Maybe you could give a little bit of an explanation of exactly how you do this.
Yes. So the patient is telling you about his illness and is telling you about the modalities and generalities of the illness. The modalities and the generalities of the illness will tell you a little bit about what kind of miasm it is. For example, they feel weak, they feel cold, they need a lot of rest, they need a lot of support, they need to eat a lot, heavy food. You know that this patient belongs to the psoriatic miasm. Another patient is in front of you, very depressed, can't sleep, can't speak very well about his problems. When you ask him about mentals, emotionals, he will keep silent, thinking long time. You know he belongs to the syphilitic miasm that is not able to express themselves. There is, in the interview, the patient that is hurried, that is hot, that is a strong personality, that keeps awake half of the night, doing a lot of things, become awake in the middle of the day, sleeps in the morning, and you know by this history he belongs to the psychotic miasm. There are illnesses that belong to the different miasms. For example, if Sora has illnesses, he will suffer mostly in the daytime, feeling bad, needing the rest. Often Sora has symptoms that are mostly not that severe. It means it is combined with weakness. They are very tired. When you have a syphilitic patient, there's always an illness that tells you there is something going on in that person that is not logic in the way perhaps you see in his face a kind of imperfectness. You see the teeth that are not in a correct range. You see perhaps that he has skin is gray, he does not like healthy at all. And in this way, together with the mental, emotional picture, you can recognize the syphilis. In psychosis, you will hear a history of having done much too much in life, liking much too much things, and coming into diseases that mostly belong to the lower abdomen, belong to growths, warts, swellings, cysts, tumors. So if we combine the generalities, the modalities, and how the patient looks together with his symptoms, then it's very easy to understand to which miasm he belongs. In that new book, there are lists mentioned about what kind of symptoms belong to what kind of miasms, and it's very helpful to understand the patient in this way.
Very interesting. So your book goes into quite a bit of detail, because I know practitioners are really looking for this information. They want to use miasms in their practice, but they actually don't really know how to do it. And I feel that you're really the master of being able to understand how to use miasms in your practice. I've spoken to a lot of your students who have told me that they would have limited results in their practice until they actually began to study with you, especially with chronic diseases. So your book actually goes into this in detail and would allow somebody to actually be able to apply miasms effectively in their practice?
Yeah. I like to give a little example about, for example, you have a child with ear infection, which we
okay.
all have in the practice. The child will be weeping, going to the lap of the mom, crying, looking for consolation. After the consolation, he starts to play a little bit, and the history repeats himself, goes back to the mom, likes the consolation, complains about earaches. This is a typical patient that needs a psoriatic remedy.
Mm.
And when we look to the different remedies we can prescribe, we only have to pick out the psoriatic remedies for them and make a choice in the psoriatic remedies.
Mm.
It makes the choice of your remedies easier and the way of cure shorter and more precise. Another child that has an ear infection is playing, starts to bump his head against the wall, cries because he has an ear infection, runs around, gets a red face, is very expressive, does not want the lap of the mom. You can be sure you need a psychotic remedy, because the way of expressing is psychotic, and one of the psychotic remedies will help. Another example. Child, ear infection, middle of the night, starts to cry. Mom runs to the bed. What does she see? The drum has exploded. There's stuff coming out of the ear. A typical way how a syphilitic ear infection shows himself. Again, the homeopath, when she asks or he asks about the time, about how it manifested himself, has the possibility to find a syphilitic remedy in this way. and can very quick and precise prescribe because of he knows the miasm.
Very interesting. Henny, did you start using miasms in your practice at the very beginning, or did you incorporate them at a certain point, and how did that come about?
Not in the beginning. In the beginning, it was so difficult to find remedies. I was busy with remedies, finding remedies, as everybody. But when I went again through the chronic miasms after some years and found out that there is the difficult differentiation between the different miasms as Hahnemann describes it, I felt the need to study it thoroughly and find out how I could make that very difficult idea, as I found it, to a practical thing to apply in my patients. And that was about, I think, about 8 to 10 years after starting my practice.
Mm-hmm. And it had a big effect in your practice when
you
started. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
If we have to find a miasmatic remedy, it limits the awful lot of remedies we have to a certain amount where we can choose the remedy. And the second thing that is very beneficial for it is that if you find the correct miasmatic remedy, there are not that relapses as you have when you only find a remedy that suits to the situation at that moment. This is what Hahnemann discovered, that he saw patients were better by the homeopathic remedies, but in chronic cases, the situation came back until he studied that there had to be a certain power behind that, and he called it the miasms.
Henny, many patients seem to have symptoms of more than one miasm, and certainly the remedies seem to represent, like, you know, there's remedies that have both psoriatic and psychotic or psoriatic and syphilitic. How do you address this situation? Because that's, I think, an area of confusion for a lot of people.
When you know the basic miasms very well, the psoria, the syphilis, the psychosis, and you know how their makeup is, you will see indeed patients that are children from, for example, a psoriatic mother, a syphilitic father, and you will see both miasms running through the case. That means you have to find a remedy that is strong in both miasms. If you have a patient where you see the three miasms changing and running through each other, you have to find a three miasmatic remedy. That's the only thing you have to do.
And what happens, like, let's say you have a case and you see three miasms in the case, and the symptoms of the remedy seem to cover the case, but really only the remedy really is only a remedy that seems to focus on two miasms. Do you just not prescribe that remedy, or how do you deal with that type of situation?
What happens is if I don't find the remedy with the three miasms, because it is not there or I don't know that remedy, I have to prescribe a remedy with two miasms.
Mm.
But what I know is when I prescribe for two miasms and one miasm is left alone, two miasms will be better, but the third miasm will show itself more profoundly with more symptoms, more severeness, more clearness. And after that, I have to prescribe the third miasmatic remedy. But mostly you can find a remedy with the miasms that the patients represent because we have a lot of remedies.
Right. And I know in your practice you do change remedies over a period of time. So are you sometimes doing what you're describing here where you actually are – you're working, focusing on one or two of miasms in the case, and then a second or third remedy will work on other miasms in the case? Is that how
it's
you're
possible.
Doing it?
It's
What's
possible.
That?
And this is also what Hahnemann is telling in the Organon and in the chronic diseases. Sometimes you will see that the miasms are changing. Disease comes It is a building up procedure in many years. There are influences as vaccination, antibiotics, perhaps dental work, perhaps transplantation. I think blood transfusion is used quite often in former times. When you treat a patient at a certain moment with a miasmatic remedy, you will see that after some time, you will see a total other picture. And that in that picture, you go back in the history of his illness. And it might be that you started with a thoric remedy. And after some time, 1 year, 2 years, more years perhaps, you will see suddenly, oh, gosh, this patient has a psychotic situation now with psychotic remedy, psychotic symptoms. So you know you have to go to the second miasm.
Annie, are there remedies out there that you feel are just not miasmatic remedies?
There are some.
There are some.
Some very small ones and some big ones. Hahnemann says that he did see that two remedies, Ignatia and Nux Vomica, did not work in the real deep chronic miasmatic cases. And he doesn't call this chronic remedies. And I'm sure there are some, and we don't need always the miasmatic remedies. There are patients that have complaints, but that are easy complaints, not deep back to the family background. And in those cases, you can use those other remedies. But most of the remedies have miasmatic hints in the remedy picture.
And if they don't, you're saying they're really more acute-type remedies. We give Ignatia for grief or Nux Vomica for some type of superficial situation.
Yeah, but I would say in the practice of a classical homeopath, you don't see a lot of real acute things. You see acute flare-ups of a chronic situation. I mean, when a child has gotten a lot of bronchitis and is in treatment for asthma, you will see at a certain moment that the asthma subsides and the bronchitis comes back. It's not an acute thing. It's a chronic thing. It's the way back to health. And then you have to consider, do you have to repeat the constitutional miasmatic remedy? Do you have to change your miasmatic remedy? I would not give an acute remedy in that case because it's not an acute situation.
Right. Henny, you've talked so far about the three primary miasms that Hahnemann writes about in chronic diseases, SORA, psychosis, and syphilis. There is also pseudosore or the tubercular miasm that people talk about, and also the cancer miasm. Are these miasms that you consider in your practice?
Definitely, because those two newer miasms are mixtures of the three former ones with specific symptoms of the fourth or the fifth miasm. For example, in the tuberculinum, the tubercular miasm, you will see the weakness of psora. You will see the distortion, the perversion of syphilis, and you will see the excess of psychosis together, and then I think of the remedy tuberculinum that everybody knows. We see those three packages of symptoms plus the desire for change, plus the desire for smoked food, plus the change in the mood, doing things, stopping things, trying new things. And then we have a picture of the three miasms together with a picture of the fourth. The same thing happens with the cancer miasm. In the cancer miasm, you will see several symptoms of the former four and specific symptoms of the cancer miasm. So the patient will show this in his history of health and in his symptoms.
Could you give us some, how would people recognize the cancer miasm? Could you give us a little bit of an insight into that?
Yeah. In the cancer miasm, you will see again the weakness of the sura, tiredness, for example. You will see the things that a cancer miasm can create, the illnesses with the breaking down of organs, the breaking down of the skin, the not being able often to express themselves very well in their feelings because they don't deal with their own feelings. There you see syphilis. You will see a lot of activity in helping people, in doing things for other ones, in liking to walk, liking to do certain exercises as dancing in a gracious way, not that wild way that psychosis has. You see from the tubercular miasm the desire to travel, but it's not that wild travel, not a travel without any goal. Mostly it's a cultural travel, a travel to meet people, a travel to meet cultures. You will see the artistic thing that the tubercular miasm has, but an artistic thing that's mild, mild dancing, mild colors, loving nature, loving animals, being grateful, thankful, peaceful, all that kind of things belongs to the cancer miasm.
Kenny, I've heard some other teachers mention, and I'm curious what you think about this. I've heard some other teachers mention that certain miasms were more prominent back in Hahnemann's day or Kent's day, and the miasmatic situation has changed now, and we see different miasms arising more often. And I've even heard some practitioners say that certain countries or certain areas of the world tend to be more prominent for certain miasms. I'm curious, have you had this experience, or do you have any comments about that thought?
I think so. When I think of the States with all the people that is running around from one side, from the East Coast to the West Coast, looking for work at the other side, traveling a lot, having their caravans, their boats, their motor homes, I think we see a lot of the tubercular miasm.
Mm.
And I'm sure in Europe, with his more old-fashioned, more being steady, when I think of our country, Belgium, people build bikes of land, they stay there, hold their life, they build their own houses, they buy expensive, solid furniture. I mean, you don't see the tubercular that much. You see much more sura.
Mm. And so actually in your practice, you give less tubercular remedies when you're practicing in Europe than when you would in the United States, for example.
We'll see, because of the mixture of cultures. A lot of people marry with people from other countries. A lot of people get the tubercular miasm by BCG or by the Mantoux test, where they get positive because of the test or the vaccination, then you can develop the tubercular miasm too. So I see all the miasms in Europe too, but the tubercular I see more in the United States than in Europe.
Henny, can you tell us a little bit about the European Union of Homeopathy seminars in Germany?
Oh yeah, great. They will start in March this year. And it is a total new form of seminars. In all the seminars I do until now, people is consuming, people is listening, people is answering questions that I give to them. But in that seminar, that will be for 3 years, circle of 3 years, all the persons that attend the seminar get things to do. There will be one morning of Materia Medica. They have to present the Materia Medica. After they do a lecture of Materia Medica, the other colleagues that I present will ask them questions about it. will give ideas of their own experience, will exchange. In the afternoon, we will discuss the organon and the chronic diseases. One of the attendants of the seminar will talk about 15 pages. And then there is the exchange of ideas about the subject. The next day, we start seeing patients. The colleagues see the patients, first consultation of a new patient. He does the analysis. He finds the remedy in front of the colleagues. And there will be a discussion about the way he did the consultation, the way he is analyzing, the way he is finding the remedy. And the goal of that all is coming to a same kind of conclusion in the homeopathic small world that is present there in order to present that idea of coming to a conclusion to other homeopaths that are not present in the seminar. The goal is to, I would say, to antidote the division that we have in homeopathy, to bring together the ideas that there will be a solid foundation of the idea how homeopathy works, how we have to do, how we have to think homeopathically. And this all will be coached by me. That means I am sure that this all has to be done in a kind of friendship, in a kind of respect for each other, in a kind of giving and learning from each other. And I'm very fond that this will happen because I think it might be giving a change in the homeopathic world.
Henny, you know, this is the first time I've really heard a full explanation of this, and it's very exciting. I oftentimes, you know, when I go back and I look at the old American journals like the International Hanumanian Association Transactions, I see exactly what you're describing, all these old homeopaths discussing cases, dialoguing, coming to similar ideas and conclusions, and always in a very civil manner. And today, we don't have that. We have only largely division in our community. So I want to applaud you for spearheading this project. It just sounds incredible.
Very nice. And the colleagues that will take part, some were very hesitating because perhaps for the first time they have to do it in public, are a little afraid of criticism, but I will guarantee this will not be criticism. This will be building up each other, and I'm very happy that we start this.
Is this open to everybody, Henny, or?
The first circle for 3 years is open for people that has about at least 5 to 10 years experience in full-time practice.
And if people want to get more information about participating, because I'm sure there are many people on the call who would definitely like to participate in this, it sounds quite exciting, how could they get information? Is there a website or a number they could call? Or
get in contact in Germany with, it is in Germany and it is in German. The first course is in German. We think we will make, if this is a success, in English and perhaps in other countries where it is more available for English. The idea is, because the name is European Union of Homeopaths, that means it's an English title, and the meaning is that in the future this will be done in English totally. I can give you an address. Perhaps I can fax it to you, because it's difficult, the German pronunciation for you.
You know what we can do, Henny? If you email me the information, what I can do is I can actually post it up on our website next to the recorded teleconference call. And then people can link. Does that sound okay to you?
That is okay.
Yeah, so we'll do that, and then we'll make it available right from the website at a later time. So, Henny, I understand that your book in English has just been released this week.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. I mean, I've been waiting for a while to have something written by you, and I can't wait. I'm eagerly waiting to get my own copy to read it. Can you tell people a little bit about the book?
Yeah, it's a book that tells about a miasm. What are the symptoms of each miasm? How do you recognize a little bit of theory, a lot of practical information? And in the book are cases where you can see how I deal with the miasms, the several miasms in the book. There are the five miasms in it with, from the five miasms, cases, clinical cases, cases that are seen on seminars that everybody knows this is the case we could have seen because a lot of people have seen the cases and the development of the cases. At the end of the book, there is something very interesting. There is a kind of an index where you can find some words, the page where you can find it. It is a book that is very easy for studying. There are some charts with the main symptoms of each miasm, and I've seen on this seminar that was very nice when we saw live cases that people could find the miasm for the patient that was in front of the class with the chart. And I can tell you, not all of the attendants are experienced homeopaths. Some are students. And even the students were able to find the miasm for the patient. Which shows me that it's a practical book.
So this is really kind of a hands-on practical manual that people can use like right in front of them while they're actually practicing to help them to find the best remedy in a particular case.
Yeah.
Do you have any other tips about how they could use the book or anything else you want to share with us about it?
Well, I would say if they open the book at the first, read the book, of course, but open the book during the consultation with the charge open, it's the best thing for those who are not familiar with the miasms. It's a really practical help. And they can look during the consultation to the several rubrics of the miasms. For example, I have here, I have it open. I look to syphilis, main symptoms, dullness, absence of guilt, shame, grief, disconnected from feelings, silent, self-contained, isolated, secretive, closed, hatred, revenge, capable of perversion in sexual behavior, prefers dark, the colors they like are brown and black. I mean, here we have about 10-12 symptoms. I'm sure when you recognize these things in the patient, you are able to find a syphilitic remedy for them.
That sounds very, very, very good. It sounds like that's going to be very helpful for people who want to begin to treat more serious chronic diseases using miasms.
Yeah, and I can tell that through all the years I have given seminars of it, every seminar colleagues come to me and say, hey, do you know, I had a patient I could not solve, and after trying this, I found a remedy, and it helped. Mm. This is the best thing I can hear from my colleagues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can say I've heard that from many of the people who study with you, Henny.
You heard it, yes?
Many times. I've heard many people tell me, what I've heard exactly is people say that some of them that have been practicing even 20, 25 years. Who's the woman down in Santa Cruz? Karen?
Karen Cohen.
Karen Cohen, yes. She, I remember her telling me that she studied with many, many teachers and was getting okay results, but it was really only when she began to study with you that it was almost like a light bulb went off in her head, and she was able to solve cases that she'd been working on for years, and very deep cases, and cases with deep physical pathology and chronic. And I've heard that not only from Karen Cohen, but really from Roy Ozan, from many, many individuals. And I've seen you, I've watched you practice, so I know. I've seen one patient coming in after another who's really getting cured using homeopathy, and it's very impressive. And I think the contribution you're making to homeopathy, both with your seminars and this book, is tremendous. Henny, the book is now available. Is it now available?
Pardon? Yeah,
is it available in the States right now?
It's
shipping. It's shipping already.
It is, after the seminar, it will be shipped, as far as I know, to everybody that ordered it and can order it. It will be sent immediately.
Okay, good. So let me mention for people who are on the call, if anybody is interested, we do have a book division of our company. If anybody would like to purchase Henny's book, they can call our toll-free number, which is 866-599-5950. And if they mention that they were on this teleconference call, we will give them a discount on the book. Henny, I want to thank you again so much for this wonderful call. I'm going to open it up to the other participants and let them ask some questions. But before I do that, I was hoping you could just let people know about the seminars that you're teaching in the States and also in Europe. So if anybody would like to learn with you directly, they could have the information.
Yes. I teach at two places in the States, as you mentioned, in Portland in August, in January in Florida. In Europe, I teach regularly in Switzerland, Germany, Austria, Holland, Belgium. And if people like to get information, I could send you a list where they can get the information. And in Germany and Switzerland, Austria, of course, it's in German. The English ones are in the United States for the moment. But I could give you the addresses where they can refer.
I think rather than have you say all that information on the call right now, what I'll do is when we post the call up on our website, I'll list all that information as well so they can just click on it and see all the contact information, website, email, phone numbers, so that they can get more information at that time. Does that sound okay to you?
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's just better. It's easier. So for those of you on the call, if you want more information, it will be posted up on our website in probably about a week. Henny, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful call. I have a million more questions I could ask you, but I do want to give other people an opportunity, so I'm going to unmute the lines and allow some other people a chance. So hold on one moment.
Okay, Kim.
Please, if you have a case with autistic children, in which sequence would you give a miasmatic remedy?
The autistic children don't express that mean. This belongs to the syphilitic miasm. What you often see in autistic children is that they run around. They do movements all the day long. This belongs to the psychotic miasm. So in fact, when you have a child that's autistic and runs around, does a lot of movement, typical movement for them, they need a remedy that is syphilitic and psychotic. If you have an autistic child that does the same behavior in not having contact, but sitting still, always looking, playing with paper or books, or always making the same small movement, this child is not a wild child as you see in psychosis. You need a soric syphilitic remedy for that child. So you have to see how the child behaves, how he sleeps. Some are very restless during the night. Other ones sleep well during the night. This can make us choose the remedy he needs and make us first choose the miasm to what it belongs. So when you ask the question to what does it belong, it can belong to every miasm, but the individuality of the autistic child will tell you, when you have the list in the book, you can see immediately to which miasm that child belongs.
Henny, I would assume that that's the same thing with, for example, addictions. If somebody had addictions, it could be different miasms. Am I correct in making that assumption?
You have to ask the patient for what reason he has the addiction. For example, I see quite a lot of young people that is addicted to marijuana, pot, and a lot of them smoke it, use it in the way of feeling I'm a man, I'm integrated in a group. And a lot of dead people need a third remedy, because only with the pot they can feel the connection with somebody to come over the lack of confidence. If they smoke it totally alone, not having contact with others, withdrawing themselves, not having any contact, that same addiction belongs to the syphilitic miasm. Do you see the difference?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And are the drugs also a similar type of situation?
Yeah, the similar things.
Yeah.
I've seen people that start to use cocaine. I have seen people that use all the kinds of drugs. And my first question to them is, what happened? Why did you take it the first time? And I get an answer. And that answer leads me immediately to the thoughts of one of the miasms. So today I am more creative when I take this. I can create very well. I like to create. I like to make the most wonderful things. My energy is not long. When I take this, I can do it immediately, enjoy it, and when it's finished, I'm exhausted. They belong to the tubercular miasm.
Very interesting.
I would like to ask, if you have a child of 3 years old who is autistic, you cannot ask the child, what would be between two your first choice?
True. But autistic children that are 3 years old have moms and dads or caretakers. And when the moms, dads, and caretakers are observers, they can tell you all the symptoms. So it's with autistic children exactly as with other children. A lot of information you get about a pregnancy. What happened in the pregnancy? Did the mom go through a shock? Did she get medicaments? Was she ill? How was the delivery? Was there a reaction to vaccination? How was the child before vaccination? How was it after? You get a lot of information from the parents. And this helps you, together with the observation, what you see in the child, you see if the child is looking to you, not looking to you, turning away, sitting in a corner, sitting under your desk. This you see. This you combine with the information of the parents.
Henny, there's a lot of practitioners out there who feel that autism is quite difficult to treat with homeopathy. I'm curious, what is your experience? Are you seeing a lot of results? And if so, does it take a long time? Or what is your experience?
Today we saw an autistic child back, a child that was diagnosed as being autistic. We saw him when he was about 3 years old. He got a remedy. We saw him back two times after that. He only got that one remedy that many years ago. Today we saw him back. He was kissing, getting in the arms of people, in a normal way, speaking, joking, observing, and everybody was happy to see that this autistic child was still a little bit backward. He's in a normal school now, in second degree. He has to be in third or fourth degree. He can read, he can write, he can make contact. I mean, nobody will diagnose this child anymore with autism, and this child has only got one homeopathic remedy that many years ago.
And is that unusual, or is that pretty common you see that type of result?
I see it often.
You see it often, okay. I know you're very humble. I know, I've seen you practice, so I know what type of results you get. I think we have time for one or two more questions.
Hi, Henny.
Hi.
I came on a little bit late. Maybe you spoke about the nosodes of the different miasmatic categories.
Yeah.
And how you use the nosodes to unlock a case.
Good question. You have cases where you immediately, the first time, the first interview with the patient, you will see the signs and symptoms of a certain miasm, and you will see the signs and symptoms even of the nosode of the miasm. The case that Kim referred to in the beginning, the carcinosin case, was a case of the cancer miasm where I started a case with carcinosin because the symptoms the patient had belonged to carcinosin. Sometimes you give a patient a miasmatic remedy. Let's say you give Calcarea carbonica for a psoriatic patient with his complaints. The Calcarea works. It's much better. The Calcarea stops. There is no amelioration anymore. You repeat the remedy. It doesn't work anymore. Then you have the choice to give the miasmatic nosode of that patient. In that case, mostly it will be sorbinum. Sorbinum will make the Calcarea carbonica work again. It de-blocks the situation. So you can give the nosode as a normal remedy, or you can give the nosode to de-block the case that went well but did not improve anymore on the remedy.
Hmm. Very, very good answer. I think we have time for one more question.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering when you give the nosodes, like to de-block a miasm, and let's say you start out with, I don't know, 30C or something, and the person improves, and do you continue with the nosode until it stops working, or do you just give it one time and then go back to the original remedy?
When the nosode works, after the original remedy doesn't work anymore, I know that the nosode make the original remedy work again. When there is a relapse after the nosode, I go back to the original remedy because I know that this will work again.
Very good. Henny, I want to personally thank you. As always, you're a shining light in our community. And I'm going to unmute the line so everyone can personally thank you as well. And I'll talk to you soon. This has been a wonderful call. So thank you so much.
Hi, Kim.
Can we all give Henny a big thank you?
Bye, thank you.
Bye, Henny.
Hey,
bye, Amina.
Bye. Thank you.